Dads and ladies, welcome to the Junior Classics.
Hi there, I'm Sir Bradley Hassey, a teller of borrowed tales. Join me as I share stories of courage, adventure, and wonder. But don't take my word for it. You can find out for yourself on today's Junior Classic.
My name is Grimir.
Certainly there can be no harm in me breaking just this one.
You have done wrong, Thalfi.
By my troth, no!
Greetings, Junior Scholars. I am Sir Bradley Hassey, guardian of the written word and your guide through the Junior Classics. Our mission is to safeguard the classics and inspire children to a love of good reading and a real and lasting interest in literature and history. If this is your first time listening, thank you for joining us, and a very special thank you to my loyal listeners who tune in each and every episode, and especially my Patreon supporters who help keep the show going and growing. If you like what we are doing, creating stories for the good of your kids, consider supporting me on Patreon for $5 a month. Today, we continue with the Northern Saga, How Thor Went to Jotunheim. Jotunheim is the land of the giants. But before we get to the story,
lost and found words!
Listen carefully to these words and their meanings and try and spot them during the story. Our first word today is marrow with an M, marrow. This is a soft, fatty substance inside bones. Some people like to eat marrow and consider it a delicacy. Thalfi, in our story today, disobeys Thor's orders to not break any bones from a goat. But he does it anyway because he wants to eat the marrow inside the bone. Our second word today is countenance with a C, countenance. This is a person's face or facial expression. Our third word is uncouth with a U, uncouth. This means crude, rough, or coarse. A stone on the top of a mountain is described as uncouth in our story. Our fourth word is penance with a P, penance. This means to pay a penalty for wrongdoing. The giant king in our story has a cup of penance, in which those who break the rules of his society must drink from. And our last word today is crone with a C, crone. This is an old woman who is thin and ugly. That's all for today's Lost and Found Words. Now on to the show. Thor's mighty hammer is called Mjolnir and has several superpowers you might never have heard of. First, it can destroy anything it touches and return to Thor's hand whenever he throws it. Second, it can shrink into a tiny hammer small enough for Thor to wear it on a necklace around his neck. Thor's hammer can also resurrect goats, bringing them back to life. Thor meets a countryman and his family during his journey, but they have no food to eat. The only thing to eat is the goats that pull Thor's chariot. This is not a problem, since after cooking and eating the goats, Thor can bring them back to life again in the morning. But there is a rule that must be followed. All the bones of the goats must not be broken and must be placed into a pile together after eating. The countryman's son, Thalfi, decides to break a bone in order to eat the marrow inside and throws the broken bone onto the pile of goat's bones. In the morning, he would discover the consequence of breaking this rule.
How Thor Went to Jotunheim.
Once a time, Asa, Thor, and Loki set out on a journey from Asgard to Jotunheim. They traveled in Thor's chariot, drawn by two milk-white goats. It was a somewhat cumbrous iron chariot, and the wheels made a rumbling noise as it moved, which sometimes startled the ladies of Asgard and made them tremble. But Thor liked it, thought the noise sweeter than any music, and was never so happy as when he was journeying in it from one place to another. They traveled all day, and in the evening, they came to a countryman's house. It was a poor, lonely house, but Thor descended from his chariot and determined to pass the night there. The countryman, however, had no food in his house to give these travelers, and Thor, who liked to feast himself and make everyone feast with him, was obliged to kill his own two goats and serve them up for supper. He invited the countryman and his wife and children to sup with him, but before they began to eat, he made one request of them.
Do not, on any account, break or throw away any of the bones of the goats you are going to eat for supper.
I wonder why, said the peasant's son Thalfi to his sister Roska. Roska could not think of any reason, and by, Thalfi happened to have a very nice little bone given him with some marrow in it.
Certainly there can be no harm in me breaking just this one. It would be such a pity to lose the marrow.
And as Asa Thor's head was turned another way, he slyly broke the bone in two, sucked the marrow, and then threw the pieces into the goat skins, where Thor had desired that all the bones might be placed. I do not know whether Thalfi was uneasy during the night about what he had done, but in the morning he found out the reason of Asa Thor's command, and received a lesson on wondering why, which he never forgot all his life after. As soon as Asa Thor rose in the morning, he took his hammer Mjolnir in his hand and held it over the goatskins as they lay there on the floor, whispering runes the while. They were dead skins with dry bones on them when he began to speak, but as he said the last word, Thalfi, who was looking curiously on, saw two live goats spring up and walk towards the chariot, as fresh and well as when they brought the chariot up to the door, Thalfi hoped. But no, one of the goats limped a little with his hind leg, and Asa Thor saw it. His brow grew dark as he looked, and for a minute, Thalfi thought he would run far, far into the forest and never come back again. But one look more at Asa Thor's face, angry as it was, made him change his mind. He thought of a better thing to do than running away. He came forward, threw himself at the Asa's feet, and confessing what he had done, begged pardon for his disobedience. Thor listened, and the displeased look passed away from his face.
You have done wrong, Thalfi, he said, raising him up. But as you have confessed your fault so bravely, instead of punishing you, I will take you with me on my journey and teach you myself the lesson of obedience to the Æsir, which is, I see, wanted.
Roska chose to go with her brother, and from that day, Thor had two faithful servants who followed him wherever he went. The chariots and goats were now left behind, but with Loki and his two new followers, Thor journeyed on to the end of Manheim, over the sea, and then on in the strange, barren, misty land of Jotunheim. Sometimes they crossed great mountains. Sometimes they had to make their way among torn and rugged rocks, which often through the mist appeared to them to wear the forms of men. And once for a whole day, they traversed a thick and tangled forest. In the evening of that day, being very much tired, they saw with pleasure that they had come upon a spacious hall, of which the door, as broad as the house itself, stood wide open.
Here we may have very comfortable lodge for the night,
said Thor, and they went in and looked about them. The house appeared to be perfectly empty. There was a wide hall and five smaller rooms opening into it. They were, however, too tired to examine it carefully, and as no inhabitants made their appearance, they ate their supper in the hall and lay down to sleep. But they had not rested long before they were disturbed by strange noises, groanings, mutterings, and snortings, louder than any animal that they had ever seen in their lives could make. By and by, the house began to shake from side to side, and it seemed as if the very earth trembled. Thor sprang up in a haste and ran to the open door. But though he looked earnestly into the starlit forest, there was no enemy to be seen anywhere. Loki and Thalfi, after groping about for a time, found a sheltered chamber to the right, where they thought they could finish their night's rest in safety. But Thor, with Mjolnir in his hand, watched at the door of the house all night. As soon as the day dawned, he went out into the forest, and there, stretched on the ground close by the house, he saw a strange, uncouth, gigantic shape of a man, out of whose nostrils came a breath which swayed the trees to their very tops. There was no need to wonder any longer what the disturbing noises had been. Thor fearlessly walked up to this strange monster to have a better look at him. But at the sound of his footsteps, the giant shape rose slowly, stood up an immense height, and looked down upon Thor with two gray misty eyes, like blue mountain lakes.
"Who are you?"
said Thor, standing on tiptoe and stretching his neck to look up.
"Why do you make such a noise as to prevent your neighbors from sleeping?"
"My name is Grimir. I need not ask yours. You are the little Azathor of Asgard. But pray now, what have you done with my glove?"
As he spoke, he stooped down and picked up the hall where Thor and his companions had passed the night, and which in truth was nothing more than his glove, the room where Loki and Thalfi had slept being the thumb. Thor rubbed his eyes and felt as if he must be dreaming. Rousing himself, however, he raised Mjolnir in his hand and, trying to keep his eyes fixed on the giant's face, which seemed to be always changing, he said,
"It is time that you should know, Skrymir, that I am come to Jotunheim to fight and conquer such evil giants as you are. And, little as you think of me, I am ready to try my strength against yours."
"Try it then,"
said the giant. And Thor, without another word, threw Mjolnir at his head. Said the giant.
"Did a leaf touch me?"
Again, Thor seized Mjolnir, which always returned to his hand, however far he cast it from, and threw it with all his force. The giant put up his hand to his forehead.
"I think that an acorn must have fallen on my head."
A third time, Thor struck a blow, the heaviest that ever fell from the hand of an Asa. But this time, the giant laughed out loud.
"There is surely a bird on that tree who has let a feather fall on my face."
Then, without taking any further notice of Thor, he swung an immense wallet over his shoulder and, turning his back upon him, struck into a path that led from the forest. When he had gone a little way, he looked around, his immense face appearing less like a human countenance than some strange, uncouthly shaped stone toppling on a mountain precipice.
"Bring Thor. Let me give you a piece of good advice before I go. When you get to Utgard, don't make much of yourself. You think me a tall man, but you have taller still to see, and you yourself are a very little mannequin. Turn back home from whence you came. Be satisfied to have learned something of yourself by your journey to Jotunheim."
"Mannequin or not, that will I never do,"
shouted Asa Thor after the giant.
"We will meet again, and something more will we learn or teach each other."
The giant, however, did not turn back to answer, and Thor and his companions, after looking for some time after him, resumed their journey. Before the sun was quite high in the heavens, they came out of the forest, and at noon they found themselves on a vast barren plain, where stood a great city, whose walls of dark, rough stone were so high that Thor had to bend his head quite far back to see the top of them. When they approached the entrance of the city, they found that the gates were closed and barred, but the space between the bars was so large that Thor passed through easily, and his companions followed him. The streets of the city were gloomy and still. They walked on for some time without meeting anyone. But at length they came to a very high building, of which the gate stood open.
"Let us go in and see what is going on here,"
said Thor, and they went. After crossing the threshold, they found themselves in an immense banqueting hall. A table stretched from one end of it to the other. Stone thrones stood round the table, and on every throne sat a giant, each one, as Thor glanced around, appearing more grim and cold and stony than the rest. One among them sat on a raised seat and appeared to be the chief. So to him Thor approached and paid his greetings. The giant chief just glanced at him, and without rising, said in a somewhat careless manner,
"I think it is a foolish custom to tease tired travelers with questions about their journey. I know, without asking, that you, little fellow, are as a Thor. Perhaps, however, you may be in reality taller than you appear. And as it is a rule here that no one shall sit down to table till he has performed some wonderful feat, let us hear what you and your followers are famed for, and in what way you choose to prove yourselves worthy to sit down in the company of giants."
At this speech, Loki, who had entered the hall cautiously behind Thor, pushed himself forward.
"The feat for which I am most famed is eating, and it is one which I am just now inclined to perform with right goodwill. Put food before me, and let me see if any of your followers can dispatch it as quickly as I can."
"The feat you speak of is one by no means to be despised,"
said the king.
"And there is one here who would be glad to try his powers against yours. Let Logi be summoned to the hall."
At this, a tall, thin, yellow-faced man approached, and a large trough of meat had been placed in the middle of the hall. Loki sat to work at one end, and Logi at the other, and they began to eat. "I hope I shall never see anyone eat as they eat." But the giants all turned their slow-moving eyes to watch them, and in a few minutes they met in the middle of the trough. It seemed at first as if they had both eaten exactly the same quantity, but when the thing came to be examined into, it was found that Loki had indeed eaten up all the meat, but that Logi had also eaten the bones and the trough. Then the giants nodded their huge heads and determined that Loki was conquered. The king now turned to Thalfi and asked what he could do. "I was thought swift of foot among the youth of my own country," said Thalfi, "and I will, if you please, try to run a race with anyone here."
"You have chosen a noble sport indeed, but you must be a good runner if you could beat him with whom I shall match you."
Then he called a slender lad, Hugi by name, and the whole company left the hall, and going out by an opposite gate to that by which Thor had entered, they came out to an open space, which made a noble race ground. There, the goal was fixed, and Thalfi and Hugi started off together. Thalfi ran fast, fast as the reindeer which hears the wolves howling behind, but Hugi ran so much faster that passing the goal, he turned round and met Thalfi halfway in the course.
"Try again, Thalfi!"
cried the king, and Thalfi, once more taking his place, flew along the course with feet scarcely touching the ground. Swiftly as an eagle, when from his mountain crag, he swoops on his prey in the valley. But with all his running, he was still a good bow shot from the goal when Hugi reached it.
"You are certainly a good runner. But if you mean to win, you must do a little better still than this. But perhaps you wish to surprise us all the more this third time?"
The third time, however, Thalfi was wearied. And though he did his best, Hugi, having reached the goal, turned and met him not far from the starting point. The giants again looked at each other and declared that there was no need of further trial, for Thalfi was conquered. It was now Asa Thor's turn, and all the company looked eagerly at him, while the Utgard king asked by what wonderful feat he chose to distinguish himself.
"I will try a drinking match with any of you,"
Thor said shortly, for to tell the truth, he cared not to perform anything very worthy in the company in which he found himself. King Utgard appeared pleased with his choice, and when the giants had resumed their seats in the hall, he ordered one of his servants to bring in his drinking cup, called the Cup of Penance, which it was his custom to make his guests drain at a draft, if they had broken any of the ancient rules of the society.
"There," he said, handing it to Thor. "We call it well drunk if a person empties it at a single draught. Some, indeed, take two to it, but the very puniest can manage it in three."
Thor looked into the cup. It appeared to him long, but not so very large after all. And being thirsty, he put it to his lips and thought to make short work of it and empty it at one good hearty pull. He drank and put the cup down again, but instead of being empty, it was now just so full that it could be moved without danger of spilling.
"You are keeping all your strength for the second pull, I see,"
said Utgard, looking in. Without answering, Thor lifted the cup again and drank with all his might till his breath failed. But when he put the cup down, the liquor had only sunk down a little from the brim.
"If you mean to take three draughts to it, you are really leaving yourself a very unfair share for the last time. Look to yourself, Vingthor. For if you do not acquit yourself better in other feats, we shall not think so much of you here as they say the Aesir do in Asgard."
At this speech, Thor felt angry, and seizing the cup again, he drank a third time, deeper and longer than he had yet done. But when he looked into the cup, he saw that only a very small part of its contents had disappeared. Wearied and disappointed, he put the cup down and said he would try no more to empty it.
"It is pretty plain,"
said the king, looking round on the company,
"that Asa Thor is by no means the kind of man we always supposed him to be."
"Nay,"
said Thor,
"I am willing to try another feat, and you yourselves shall choose what it shall be."
"Well, there is a game at which our children are used to play. A short time ago, I dare not have named it to Asa Thor. But now I am curious to see how he will acquit himself in it. It is merely to lift my cat from the ground. A childish amusement, truly."
As he spoke, a large gray cat sprang into the hall, and Thor, stooping forward, put his head under to lift it up. He tried gently at first, but by degrees he put forth all his strength, tugging and straining as he had never done before. But the utmost he could do was to raise one of the cat's paws a little way from the ground.
"It is just as I thought,"
said King Utgard, looking round with a smile.
"But we all are willing to allow. The cat is large, and Thor, but a little fellow."
"Little as you think, who is there who will dare to wrestle with me in my anger?"
"In truth, I don't think there is anyone here who would choose to wrestle with you. But if wrestle you must, I will call in that old crone Ellie. She has in her time laid low many a better man than Asa Thor has shown himself to be."
The crone came. She was old, withered, and toothless, and Thor shrank from the thought of wrestling with her, but he had no choice. She threw her arms around him and drew him towards the ground, and the harder he tried to free himself, the tighter grew her grasp. They struggled long. Thor strove bravely, but a strange feeling of weakness and weariness came over him. And at length he tottered and fell down on one knee before her. At this sight, all the giants laughed aloud, and Utgard, coming up, desired the old woman to leave the hall and proclaimed that the trials were over. No one of his followers would now contend with Asa Thor, he said, and night was approaching. He then invited Thor and his companions to sit down at the table and spend the night with him and his guests. Thor, though feeling somewhat perplexed and mortified, accepted his invitation courteously and showed, by his agreeable behavior during the evening, that he knew how to bear being conquered with a good grace. In the morning, when Thor and his companions were leaving the city, the king himself accompanied them without the gates. And Thor, looking steadily at him when he turned to bid him farewell, perceived for the first time that he was the very same giant Skrymir with whom he had met in the forest.
"Come now, Asa Thor,"
said the giant with a strange sort of smile on his face.
"Tell me truly before you go, how you think your journey has turned out, and whether or not I was right in saying that you would meet with better men than yourself in Jotunheim."
"I confess freely,"
answered Asa Thor, looking up without any false shame on his face,
"that I have acquitted myself but humbly, and it grieves me. For I know that in Jotunheim henceforward it will be said that I am a man of little worth."
"By my troth, no! Never should you have come into my city if I had known what a mighty man of valor you really are. And now that you are safely out of it, I will, for once, tell the truth to you, Thor. All this time, I have been deceiving you by my enchantments. When you met me in the forest and hurled Mjolnir at my head, I should have been crushed by the weight of your blows had I not skillfully placed a mountain between myself and you, on which the strokes of your hammer fell, and where you cleft three deep ravines, which shall henceforth become verdant valleys. In the same manner I deceived you about the contests in which you engaged last night. When Loki and Logi sat down before the trough, Loki indeed eat like hunger itself, but Logi is fire, who with eager consuming tongue licked up both bones and trough. Thialfi is the swiftest of mortal runners, but the slender lad, Hugi, was my thought. And what speed can equal his? So it was in your own trials. When you took such deep draughts from the horn, you knew little what a wonderful feat you were performing. The other end of that horn reached the ocean, and when you come to the shore, you will see how far its waters have fallen away, and how much the deep sea itself has been diminished by your draught. Hereafter, men watching the going out of the tide will call it ebb or draught of Thor. Scarcely less wonderful was the prowess you displayed in that second trial. What appeared to you to be a cat was in reality the Midgard serpent, which encircles the world. When we saw you succeed in moving it, we trembled, lest the very foundations of earth and sea should be shaken by your strength. Nor need you be ashamed of having been overthrown by the old woman, Ellie, for she is old age, and there never has and never will be one whom she has not the power to lay low. We must now part, and you had better not come here again, or attempt anything further against my city, for I shall always defend it by fresh enchantments, and you will never be able to do anything against me.
At these words, Thor raised Mjolnir, and was about to challenge the giant to a fresh trial of strength. But before he could speak, Utgarda vanished from his sight, and turning round to look for the city, he found that it too had disappeared, and that he was standing alone on a smooth, green, empty plain.
What a fool I have been, to allow myself to be deceived by a mountain giant.
Ah,
answered a voice from above.
I told you. You would learn to know yourself better by your journey to Jotunheim. It is the great use of traveling.
Thor turned quickly round again, thinking to see Skrymir behind him. But after looking on every side, he could perceive nothing but that of a high cloud-capped mountain, which he had noticed on the horizon, appeared to have advanced to the edge of the plain. Well, I hope you enjoyed the story. What was your favorite part? Next time on the Junior Classics, we'll hear the tale of how Loki made a wager with the dwarves. Until then, I am Sir Bradley Hasse. Be brave, be loyal, and speak the truth.
Now for you parents out there, I want you to understand why we are doing this, what we are trying to achieve, and how you can help us. This is a rescue operation to preserve the classics and the wisdom within before it is lost forever. Our goal is to inspire children with a love of good reading by safeguarding and breathing new life into the greatest stories in history, and empower you, the parents, with a resource you can trust to enrich your child's mind and spirit. We don't want these stories and the wisdom within to be forgotten, so our children don't have to learn these lessons on their own. The most important thing you can do for us is to spread the message and tell others about these stories and what we are doing. If you want to donate, we would love that as well. My promise is that 100% of donations will go to building the impact and quality of the Junior Classics. If you have feedback and thoughts on how we can do things better, please send an email to juniorclassicspodcast@gmail.com.
You're listening to the Junior Classics.